Inverse Genius, episode 87, Escapist Art, Fortnightly. In this episode, Eric and Bruce talk about interactive art in mini escape rooms and casino-themed video games. Hey, if you like what you hear and you'd like to support us, you can go to patreon.com/OBG. Everything that comes in from there goes to cover our monthly podcasting costs, which we appreciate. Thanks. Hello and welcome to another episode of Inverse Genius Fortnightly. Wait a minute, Eric, I thought that show was dead. It's been quiet for a long time. Yeah, I know. It's one of those things where 1 week leads to 2 weeks, which leads to a month, which leads to, wait a minute, it's been a while. So,
As life goes.
Indeed. So we'll try to be much more regular. I got to, Don moving was a big, I'm going to blame it on that. We'll just blame it on that.
That works for me. Anytime we can scapegoat Don, I'm okay with it. But once we're back up to full strength, we'll keep doing this relatively fortnightly.
Exactly. So, as you can tell, Bruce Vogue is with us again. Bruce Vogue the third, not to be confused with Bruce Vogue the second.
Absolutely. Here, as always, with the one, Dr. Dewey. Or as I want to call you, Mr. Dr. Dewey.
Mr. Dr. Dewey. I like it. For whatever reason, I had often had people give me the nickname of Dr. Dewey just because, I'd have answered questions, worked at help desks and stuff. And it's just a natural alliterative thing. Nice. So now that it's official, nobody ever calls me that anymore.
Nice.
Not entirely true. All right. So let me just jump off. I'll go first if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
So, of course, you had our favorite moderator, Chris, on a while back to talk about his experiences with the Omega Mart, the Meow Wolf Omega Mart art installation. Yep. And as I was listening to that, I was like, that sounds incredibly cool. And then I was talking to my daughter, who's really into art and is an artist. And she's like, oh, yeah, I've heard about that. That's really neat. And we should go sometime. And then we discovered that Grapevine, Texas, in the Dallas Metroplex, has a Meow Wolf installation. Yep. And so this last week here, we hopped into the Corolla, drove down to Grapevine, and explored Meow Wolf, the real unreal.
Nice.
So, and it's very, when you try to describe it to people, it's very hard to understand. Very hard to describe, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Begin to imagine just with the, so I'm sort of just a fan from the outside. So I've tried not to watch so much of anything about any of them that I've been spoiled on, like, how the game works if I ever go get to check it out. But even the stuff you can find kind of in basic internet videos is so nonsensical and so bordering to Dadaism.
Yes.
That it seems to be hard to even when I try to do these things where, like, I tell people, like, oh, you're in Texas, you need to check this out. I can't make sense of it while I'm saying it, even though I know it's a video I watched and then I'm remembering it relatively well.
Exactly. So what it is immersive art, right? It's this thing you explore, and there's just a lot of interesting and weird art, but it's also telling some kind of a story. So this is found inside the Grapevine Mills Mall, which is honestly, it's kind of a weird mall. I've been going to this mall for a long, long time. We took our kids down there. There's a little mini Legoland in there with like two rides and a bunch of activities. There's an aquarium in there, and then there's a bunch of shops. These days, it's a bunch of outlet shops, so like Saks and Nordstrom and all that. They seem to have that. And then some restaurants and other stuff. But smack dab in the middle of it is, they do have a Rainforest Cafe as well, if you want more traditional immersive.
Like four left.
Right. I was surprised it was still alive, but it was. And anyway, like I said, it's inside the mall. And the idea here is that you go in and you're immediately presented with, at nighttime, this house. And this house is in front of you. There's a garden in it. And then you can go into the house or you can explore the garden. And as you go in there, you immediately start to figure out there's a story going on here. There's something going on. And the story itself is real easy to pick up. And then from there, it's just a matter of exploration. You walk through the house. You're like, hey, wait a minute. Like, you open the fridge and suddenly there's a a tunnel in the fridge that leads to other fridges. It's like a room full of fridge doors, and you open those up and you explore what's there. And that's pretty much it. Like everything you do, you turn a corner and it's like, oh, there's something else. And it's something weird. There's these alien forests. There's a whole little town, little city, kind of like a neopunk or cyberpunky kind of town right in the middle there. And just untold other just interesting, unusual, strange, and quite frankly, overwhelming. I think that was probably the best word I could describe. When we were starting to go through, we saw, hey, you can get an annual pass, like a season pass. And I was like, why would you want to go through this mall? I mean, like, once you've explored it, you kind of get it, right? No, because there's so many levels to it that you can kind of dig into. So I could easily see you going back. My initial brain was like, this is an escape room. I've got to figure out the story and you know, and solve the mystery, right? And there is just way too much, at least for me, to even attempt to solve. Like, there's a little basket by the front door of the mail that they've gotten recently. And you can dig through the mail. It's kind of laminated so that, you know, you can take it out, read it, and look at it. There's like 15 pieces of mail in there that I'm not going to read, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And there's videos, like the family does like a video channel of cooking or something. You can watch some of their videos and the story unfolds in there. And there's like all of this stuff where the story just keeps going. So I've got the high points of the story. And I'm mildly curious if there's a climax somewhere in there. They imply it. Okay. And so I don't know if you do certain things, if you can find the secret room that shows you the climax to the story. But quite frankly, by the time we had finished exploring everything that we could find, we were sort of wiped out, just kind of, you know, we've just seen, our senses have been stimulated for a good hour and a half or so kind of thing. And I remember Chris saying something similar as well.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say, was that he noted that, you know, maybe it was that he was a couple days tired because he had been in Vegas doing a show there for the, I think the World Series of Board Gaming. He didn't quite know what it was, but that he could only take it for like an hour.
Yeah. So it was well worth doing. It was really interesting. It was weirder than I'm normally comfortable with. Like if I go to a sort of like a modern art museum, I'm always real hesitant because a lot of times there's just weird art that I'm just not getting at all. And I feel that's part of it, right? The weirdness, the unusualness is all part of the experience as well. So it wasn't off-putting, but it was like, oh, I appreciate what you're doing. I don't like it kind of thing, you know, like it's.
And I think a lot of modern art, that's kind of, you're allowed to have that relationship with it. And it often wants that relationship. It becomes like punk rock. Punk rock a lot of times intentionally wants to tell you to go F yourself and wants you to be mad it did it.
Yes.
if you say, well, whatever, then punk rock will kind of give you a hug. But punk rock's not mad if you turn away angry when it was offensive to you. It, you know, it's not, it's like, yeah, no, that's why I was offensive to you. Go F off. That's fine. And I think a lot of modern art kind of works the same way. The quote I've always loved, I don't know if it's really from Andy Warhol, because you never know anymore. Even if you go look it up, the internet will lie to you, is that art is what you can get away with.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of Andy Warhol's art is definitely that. And I think a lot of times you're seeing that in modern art and especially in these kind of experiential spaces.
Yeah. I'll say the parts I enjoyed the most were the parts that were most grounded in reality. Even the refrigerator thing. Because I get it. Like, oh, this refrigerator is leading to a dimension of other refrigerators. That's kind of fun and cool. And like the fake city that you kind of come into is kind of neat. But I enjoyed it all. I was impressed with all of it. The one thing I thought, I don't even call it a negative, but at the beginning they're like, oh, do you want these special glasses that really enhance the color? They're kind of like the 3D glasses that are transparent. And so they kind of prism. Like, yeah, sure, throw us a pair on there. And there was really only one moment where that really made any kind of difference. And I was a little disappointed because I was hoping there'd be this sort of, I don't know, LSD effect or something. Yeah. And it did a little bit. But there was one where it actually made things 3D. And everything else, it was just kind of like you'd put them on. You're like, okay, it's kind of the same, and put it off. So, but yeah, so they call it the real unreal. And you're wandering through this house and then through other dimensions is what I'm going to call them. The only other thing, and this is, again, a statement more on me, is that it's incredibly non-linear. So, like, as I mentioned, you walk in and there's the house, and there's a little, you know, garden to the left, and then there's like a little path to the right. You can take any of those. They all branch out. They all come back in. And so there's a lot of, I want to go, you know, follow the path, but there's all these paths that all kind of branch out and intersect, and you keep coming back to where you came from sometimes. And so trying to keep it all straight, because we have no idea what the layout of this place looks like. I mean, like, if you think of like an amusement park ride, like the Haunted Mansion or something, you're kind of like, oh, I don't really know what this place is kind of like. That's this. I cannot picture the floor plan of this in any way, form, or fashion, because it's all twisty and crazy.
Oh, I'm sure. Also, so I'm trying to remember my different Meowwolves. Did they try to sell you like a plastic card?
No.
When you were there?
No.
Because there's one of them where it plays with the meta aspects of what you're doing. So I also, I don't know if they're still doing it, that one, but they play with the fact that they're in a mall and there's like mall walkers outside. Are they still doing that?
They have like the
lead-hearted mall walkers?
Nope, I haven't seen that.
So I know when they first opened, they sort of were like, it's Meow Wolf in a mall, y'all.
Yeah.
So every like 20 minutes, like a bunch of people in bright blue and pink, like tight Lycra would come out and like walk the, mall and would hand out stickers and stuff. And I thought it was this one, but it might be one of the other ones. They want to sell you a plastic card that seems to do nothing. And if you know, and this is the thing that I think makes the escape room part of it so hard, because if an escape room is designed well, you should, in theory, be able to kind of reason your way through what the designer wanted you to do so that you can get to the end of the game.
Yes.
That it should be hard, but that there should be some reasonable way for you to figure the pieces out. And Meow Wolf doesn't care. It's like those things in video games where you're like, oh, well, if you had gone to the left boxing ring, jumped in the ring, and then jumped in the air 100 times, the boxing ring would have become a UFO, and then that would have taken you to another planet. And you don't know it unless you do it. I know with that one, there was something where if you used the card in an ATM, which was kind of like outside the game, it would spit out a receipt that were music notes. And if you got to a piano somewhere else in it and had someone that could read music, they could play the piano with the notes from the ATM receipt. And then that would trigger like a potential, I guess, what we'll just call like an endgame experience, where something happens in one of the rooms you don't see unless you knew to do all these very specific things. And Meow Wolf doesn't care if you figure it out or not.
Yep.
If you do, great. If you don't, fine. Buy a season pass and watch all of the cheat videos just like a video game.
Right, right. And in fact, there is indeed a piano and there is a piece of music on the wall. And I was like, oh, I wonder if you play this.
Yes. So that used to be an ATM receipt that you had to get out of an ATM when you came in. And you could go back out and come back in. But it felt like, if I understand from what the videos I've seen, it felt like it was out of bounds. So a lot of people never tried it. They never bought the card and then just shoved it in the ATM, because you'd never think the fake card you bought
right.
had anything to do with an ATM. And it was really difficult for people to figure it out. And finally somebody like realized they were looking at music, and then they got to the, because I saw the moment where it was played and somebody was like, does anybody play music? Someone's like, yeah, I play the piano. Like, can you read music? And she was like, yeah. And you watch them do it. And all of a sudden, like a thing lifts up and lights come. And like, there's a whole thing if you can play the music. But I mean, yes, it was so difficult. Or once the thing was put online, so many people were messing with the ATM that they just put the music on the wall to try to make it not so esoteric.
Yeah. So actually, that is a good point. So like when you walk into this place, you immediately pay, and then you kind of walk in and there's bathrooms. There's a little cafe. If you keep going straight, you'll see the gift shop. And then there is a separate entrance to actually get into the experience itself. So there is sort of a little waiting room, gift shoppy area as well, that which is probably where that ATM was sitting. So
I would guess maybe. I can't tell, just being a nerd watching the videos and not actually having been to a Meow Wolf, kind of how that stuff works.
I tell you, I think it's definitely worth exploring. I mean, it's kind of a neat, fun, just sort of experience, whether or not you even get into the storyline or any of the kind of puzzles or whatnot that's going in there. Like I said, we walked out and I was like, now we know what to expect. Now I want to go back and be a little more critical in my observations and but I need to rest first. It was really my thinking.
That's definitely what I've heard. I keep wanting to go to one because I love that feeling of being overstimulated is a, you know, it sort of feels like the Bane thing where it's like, you live in the dark, Batman, but I was born in the dark. Like, I can really handle being overstimulated very well, better than most people. So I've really wanted to go to one just to see if it hits me too. I'm sure it will because I've heard it just so much.
Yeah.
But I kind of just want to see how long I can last in it.
So one of the things that we thought was really similar to it was the City Museum in St. Louis. Now,
I want to check that out so bad.
So that's like a warehouse in downtown St. Louis that I always just pictured like hippie artists just build stuff. And there's no cohesive story in this at all like there is in Meow Wolf. But it's just every room is just some kind of, this one's a treehouse. This one's a, you know, a 10-story slide. You know, it's just stuff everywhere. You climb on it. It's a really fun kind of immersive experience. That's the closest that we've ever come to what we had here. But here, there's obviously a lot more thought put into less randomness. And a little more story in there. So anyway,
I will make one quick note that in the City Museum in St. Louis, at the top of the building is a single apartment.
Really?
That belonged to the curator. Cause I almost, my partner and I were talking about, we were trying to figure out if we could move to St. Louis because the apartment was very nice and it must be in a not great part of town.
It's not.
But it was, you could buy it for like $275,000 and everything was concrete countertops and big spaces. But part of the deal was one, you had to like meet the people at the museum because you have access to parts of the museum you're not supposed to have access to. And there's no way to stop you. So you had to have like a real good relationship with the museum and you were never allowed to do a short-term rental. You could do a long-term rental under the same rules that the museum is okay with the person that's like long-term renting the place for years, but you couldn't make it an Airbnb because they couldn't have this many people with this much access to parts of the museum.
Right.
But it was made with a curator and was just such a wild apartment that was just a continuation of the weird stuff that was in the museum coming through the apartment. You know, it'd be like a giant saw blade that was dividing part of a room and things like that. That we saw on Zillow, and we were trying to figure out if we could just uproot our lives and move to St. We were like, could we do it? Could we still do what we do as profitably as we do it where we are with less established roots? And that's kind of what stopped us was I did not know if I could rebuild the company I have here in the Baltimore, D.C. area in St. Louis as successfully. So we didn't go for it. But if you ever look on Zillow, look for like apartment in the City Museum and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's like a full giant condominium he built himself. It's super cool.
Cool. So what do you got for me, Bruce?
So I have kind of a double here. We're going to talk about two things, two, because they're so similar. We're talking about video games because I am a person, I have a huge background in casino games, having dealt them, having played them, having probably been more than comfortably, we won't say full addicted because I don't think it ever ruined my life, but I certainly have found myself with a bit of a compulsion now and again for it, and I've tried to sort of back away from it. But at the end of all that, I still have kind of a love of casino games. Are they good games? No. If money's involved, if money's not involved, are they still a game? No, not really. Do they cheat every way they can legally? They try to confuse you as much as they can. But let's pretend for a second that we take these basic constructs, things like a video poker machine or a slot machine, and we have people reverse engineer them into an actual game, what do we find? And we find a pair of games that I want to talk about. The first one is a game called Balatro or Balatro, B-A-L-A-T-R-O. Essentially what this is a video poker machine mixed with whatever your favorite procedural deck building roguelike card game is. So I think probably the Coca-Cola of this space is Slay the Spire.
Yep.
Is going to be the one that people are going to think of. But essentially you start the game looking at a video poker machine. And I'm going to say this, one of the things that's been a turnoff to some people is it's sort of in a like that 1980s, not quite dot matrix, but pixely font everything's done in, because it's clearly trying to be a video poker machine from the late 80s, early 90s, to the point to where like the wave of the like the CRT monitor will kind of cross the screen sometimes. I think you can turn some of that stuff off. I find it incredibly charming because I've played a lot of video poker in my day. But essentially, you start with a deck of standard 52 cards, and you're going to keep getting challenges called antes. The antes will keep going up, and every time you face a boss ante, the boss ante can do wild stuff to you. But you can combat all this, because in between every ante, you get to go to the store and buy jokers and buy more cards. And you also can buy cards of planets that can go into the pay scale in video poker, which if you've ever played video poker, essentially it just hands you five cards, you draw cards, it finishes your hand, and then it pays you your wager against a pay scale, where single card is the lowest all the way up to a royal flush, and it pays you multiples of cards. Here it pays you multiples of points that you can collect with the cards that you're using. So you can buy planet cards that are going to start bending the chart of card values. So your pairs are going to start to become worth more, or your flushes will be worth more, or your straight flushes will be worth more. At the same time, you're buying a deck of tarot cards. The tarot cards can grab some of your cards in your card deck and start to switch what they do. Or they can produce more planet cards. Or they can give you more jokers you can cheat with. Or they do all these things to bend the game. Then there's a deck of about 150 jokers, of which you're allowed to have up to five in the base game. And you're going to buy these to bend what the game can do. So maybe every time I play a club, I get bonuses to how many coins are going to go into the sort of pay grid. Or maybe I need money to buy more cards. If I have the golden joker, every single hand, it's going to hand me more money than I'm supposed to get so that I can buy more jokers and more cards and more. And it's just this insanity keeps going until you can build hands that don't exist. Like one of my favorite is I've randomly found in one run, I built a flush house. Which is a full house flush. So it was like 3/8 of clubs filled with 2/10 of clubs. And once you do that, it opens up a planet you've never seen because your planets bend the grid. Well, you can't pull this other planet until you've bent the grid to add an extra hand to it. Then it can add an extra planet that can help that part of the grid. Like, so this is what you're considering through the whole game is it starts as video poker and shuffles more stuff in to make it crazier. You can do things that pull cards out of your deck so you can start to streamline. So essentially you do the same thing you do in all of these other games, which is you figure out where your exploit is. So maybe you know you can grind your deck down to be mostly one suit. So then you want to make the flush as valuable as possible so that every time you're drawing cards, you're just drawing flush after flush after flush after flush with a bonus on a bonus and a bonus so that you make a ton of chips so that you can beat the bosses. Wash, rinse, and repeat. With all of that variation, it takes what is a very simple kind of game you can fall asleep to, which is video poker, and bends it into a really unique experience.
That is cool. It looks fun. I played similar games, which we'll talk about here momentarily, but this just went on my wish list.
It is a truly great game, and it's what's kind of grabbing the sphere right now in this space. It's just what an amazing... People are saying, you know, game of the year already for this game because it's just so well put together, and it's such a simple premise and does a great job of that ramping up the silliness and the stupidity at a slow enough level that you don't feel wholly overwhelmed. At the same time, you're going to kind of be opening presents and going like, what does a red seal do? What do you mean a red seal? And you're randomly going to have like, you can also buy packs of trading, like they look like trading card packs, but they're going to be more jokers or more cards you can add to your deck. So you're like, well, do you want a two of clubs made out of glass? Or do you want a steel 10 of diamonds? Or do you want a queen of clubs that's lucky and gold and also has a red seal on it that gives you bonuses? But they introduce that stuff so slowly that the experience of finding it is fun, but you don't feel wholly overwhelmed because if that stuff's too much for you, don't buy the card. If you don't want to deal with what those other effects, just stick with the rivers and the lakes that you're used to, which makes it just a super fun experience.
That is cool.
And then you and I had talked about that off the air, that I at some point wanted to talk about how great I thought this was when it was just a demo. It is now a full game. You can buy it. And you mentioned another game to me where you said, huh, sort of sounds like this. So if Balatro is a video poker machine, on the same Mega Touch video poker machine should be this game, Luck Be a Landlord. Luck Be a Landlord is everything we just talked about, except it's a slot machine.
Yep.
So on the reels, you start with a relatively normal slot machine, with the exception, I think, cats start on the reels. But between you, your landlord says you owe them money. You need to figure out how to get money. You put a coin in the slot machine. You pull the handle, and it shows you these weird reels. And as you go along, you're buying new symbols to put on the reels, hoping they're going to interact with the rest of the symbols you have to do cool things. On top of this, at the end of every kind of level set, when you get through your boss thing you have to do, which is pay the landlord the money, you then can get like lucky charms, and the lucky charms can do things where they can see the reels that you have, and they'll provide you extra bonuses if you can make things happen. And a lot of it is just nonsense until you can figure out the other pieces. It's stuff like, oh, this is an arrow. If the bow and arrow gets found, it will fire its arrow in the direction it's pointing. And if it hits a bullseye, good. You're like, well, what does that mean? And then 20 buys later, you find the bullseye, and it says, if it gets hit by an arrow, it disappears, but it pays you $40. And the whole thing is just trying to figure out how to dial the combos in to keep dealing with the escalating cost that your landlord is putting on you. And I think I really like it. I would say of the two, if you're only going to get one, I am going to lean to Balachar more than I am Luck Be a Landlord. I will also tell you, I'm attempting to figure out how to make like a quasi arcade machine that can play both of them that feels like an old video poker machine. Because both of them have that same, like, you know, pixel art look to them. They're both in the same weird casino together. So I think seeing them on like a machine with side art of each one of them and the big chunky like video poker buttons would be kind of cool if there's a way to work that out. And I'm trying to figure that out now.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. One of the things I enjoy about Luck Be a Landlord is, first of all, you can go in with the idea of like, oh, I'm just going to play a handful of reels and then I'll come, you know, spins and I'll leave. And of course, you know, an hour later, you're still spinning, but you could leave at any point and pick it up later. And then, yeah, the interactions of everything is just kind of crazy. It's like, oh, I've got a man, you know, like a miner who mines things. And then I have a dog. And if the dog's next to the man, you know, if the dog's next to any person, that's great. Or you have a thief who takes points away each time he shows up. But if the bounty hunter's next to the thief, then suddenly you get all those points and a whole bunch more. You know, so it's all of this kind of fun stuff. And then as you get higher and higher, there's opportunities to get new opportunities or new items, I should say, that give you bonuses. And suddenly you found out, you know, if I had the one that really worked for me was I got 9 cats. I just kept buying cats. Okay. I was like, surely this will pay off. And I got lucky enough to where there was an item that said, yeah, if you have 9 cats, then all cats are wild. And so suddenly I had these cats that were all wild. So they were everything anybody ever needed them to be. But if I hadn't gotten that, then 9 cats might have been kind of stupid because they don't necessarily build on one another. So there's a lot of that sort of fun stuff. You and I were joking before about, oh, I'm going to go down this path. And then you never see the key pieces that you ever want on that path. And so that happens. But it's a quick enough game that it's not going to be anything terrible.
Absolutely. I would say the thing with Luck Be a Landlord is they seem to have dumped the whole box of parts in at the very beginning. So everything's completely viable all the time, and it's just rarer stuff comes up less frequently than common stuff. The thing I like about Balatro over it is they drip feed you stuff slowly so that you kind of have in the first like one or two buys, you can construct what could be your viable strategy to make it to the end. Not that you're always going to love it. Maybe you don't quite get the joker you were dreaming of, but you'll get some path. And I feel like in Luck Be a Landlord, it feels a lot more at the hands of the random number generator. If I'm going to get, am I going to get Lucky Cat? Am I going to get Magic 9 Cat? Am I going to get, you know, the thing I need to make this plan work?
Yeah. And like you said, it can be kind of overwhelming. I tend to focus on a strategy, whether it's good or not. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not going to worry about fruit. I don't care about fruit. I'm going to focus on something else because I don't want to try and calculate all the permutations of fruits and, you know, and so, yeah, but it's all there exactly as you said. And there's a lot of things you look at as like, well, why would I ever want that? And then 62 spins later, you find out why you would want that.
Yep. And I think it is a game. Balatro, I think you could play once and go, I get this. With Luck Be a Landlord, it wants you to play it 40 times to figure out what it wants you to understand.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still putting plays in it and finding items, because you can hover over an item and it'll tell you what it does. So, like, the dog was eye-opening, because if you look at the dog's like, oh, there are 30 human beings in this game. And if you're near any of them, you get a bonus. And you're like, what does that, what do you mean there are 30 human beings? What's a milkmaid? I've never even seen a milk. Well, it's because it's an ultra rare that turns all the milk into something if only you find it. And that's the thing that I think is both cool about it and frustrating, is if you do, and exactly what you're talking about is what you should do in the game, which is you have to make those decisions of, I'm going for people, or I'm going to do cats and milk, or I'm going to do, but if you pick that path and it just never feeds you the stuff you need, you yep. just die at the third level because you, uh-oh, I should have gone fruit this time because all the fruit was out there and none of the animals were out there or whatever.
Yep, exactly. But they're fun. And what I love about both these yep. games is that they've got a nice low price point, real easy in mm-hmm. and out. Like, I think Balatro is like 15, and I want to say Luck Be the Landlord's yep. 10 to 15 as well. 10, yeah. And so it's real easy to, I love it when I come across these types of games where, you know, they're cheap and you just play and play and play and play. I've been having the same experience with like Across the Obelisk and a few others where they're just sort of out there and you're just playing and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would say if you have $25 and you like the idea of gambling games, but you'd prefer not to lose money and wager, it does very much start to kind of scratch that same itch. If you're the kind of person where you spend any amount of time like kind of zombified in front of a poker machine, you're going to get feelings of nostalgia from Balatro, which I really enjoyed. I'm like, I'm really glad this came along. I do think they're super cool. Like I said, enough that I'm going to try to build a machine for them because I think they're that cool. So yeah, well worth checking out. They're at a decent price point. They're fun games. If you like that sort of thing and the concept of it being sort of very much based in gambling doesn't upset you. Or right now, I believe that they're currently not, or Balatro is currently not on the Switch store, at least in Europe, because they're still determining whether it's a gambling game or not. I think it got pulled and they're trying to explain that it's not real gambling, but it looks much like real gambling that I could understand how whatever person that's not sitting in and playing the game goes, no, that's a gambling game. Just take it off the Switch store. Yeah. So yeah, it scratches that same itch. It's super cool. I think it's great. Check them out.
Cool.
And I believe you have one more.
I have one more. Speaking of scratching itches like escape rooms, which I was mentioning before, while we were also in the Dallas Metroplex, we went to this place called Labyrinth in Louisville, Texas. Louisville. Sorry, there's an S. Louisville. So what this place is your basic trampoline park kind of thing. You know, hey, bring the kids. Here's an hour and a half. Go run around, bounce on trampolines, etc. A lot of fun. But they also have put in this labyrinth thing. And what it essentially is I want to say 18 to 20 small rooms. And each room is its own little mini escape room. So you see the door. They have the name of the room. They're roughly themed to one another, but not necessarily. And there's a little plaque that says, all right, here's a little rhyming thing about what it is. On a scale of 1 to 6 Space Invaders, this is how difficult it is. And then here's how physical it is, and here's how mental it is. And so some of them are completely physical, some of them are completely mental, some of them are a mixture of both. And then you basically open the door, go in this little room, and go for it. And invariably what will happen is you'll hear a buzz and it says, players, please leave. And you leave the room because you didn't, you failed the test. You wait a couple of seconds, the light turns green, you go back in the room, try it again. And so let me give you an example. The first room we went in, it was the donut shop. So you open the door, you go in, and there's a counter. There are 4 metal donuts. They've clearly been touched because a lot of the paint has worn off. It says, please touch. And then all it says, players go. And you touch it and it goes, brr, brr. And then you leave and you come back in and then you start to look around. And in this case, we're like, oh, there's this many donuts. Maybe this is the order. Nope, that's not it. And so you start to try and puzzle out, what do I see around me? We finally get the order right. And then bing, door number 2 opens, little green light. You go in there, whole completely different room. In this particular case, there are these trees with different things like blueberry or strawberry and all of this PVC piping all over the place that leads to some spigots. And so you basically have to trace which spigot goes to which flavor fruiting thing. And then you have to determine what the order is. And again, you touch the spigot And if you touch the right one, you get them in the right order, door three opens and you go in there. If you get them wrong, then you go back out and start over in the first room again. And most of these rooms are three little mini, two or three. Most of them are three little mini rooms. And if you, which incidentally, we never solved the donut one. We couldn't figure out the order of the spigots. And so we just moved on to a different room. And it's just like, it's like I said, there's 18 or so different themed rooms. There is one where you're in a graveyard and a murderer is coming and you have to figure out how to get to the next thing, which is this strange room with all kinds of weird pictures and light switches. And then you figure out how to get in there. And now suddenly you're in a, what do they call it? Catacomb, mausoleum, I don't know, bunch of faces on the walls. And you got to figure out how to get there. And then if you do all three of those, then boom, you've beaten that room, and there's nothing other than a little triumphant little noise for when you beat the room. And there's another one. The floor is lava. So you've got to climb, you know, don't touch the floor. You got to climb around to get to the next thing. And it's just all those kinds of stuff. And none of them are easy. I will say, my wife and I are very smart. Our daughter was with us. We do escape rooms quite a bit. Of all of these, I think we solved three all the way through. We did five or six of them more through the second. We did first and second room, but the third room, we couldn't quite figure out what was going on. And quite honestly, I got a little tired of going through the first and second rooms over and over again just to get to the third room. But it was fun and it was neat and it was unique. And if it's unlike an escape room where you just get stuck on a puzzle, you could just kind of leave and just go to a completely different room. And kind of explore that. And they had lots of different themes. There was a pirate theme and a Nordic theme. And there was a bank that you're trying to break into a vault. I mentioned the graveyard. I mean, all kinds of stuff all over. But it was such an interesting and unique experience that we had quite a lot of fun, especially after doing this was the day after Meow Wolf. We really wanted to scratch that escape room itch that we were feeling in a Meow Wolf, but wanting something a little more contained.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, it was kind of fun. My only real disappointment with it is that it kind of needs a little bit of maintenance. Like for instance, in the donuts, you could see kids had ripped off the donuts. And so you could see where they were glued to the wall. And then they just kind of stuck them back up there. And, you know, I think it's just the virtue of having unsupervised kids going through all of these different rooms.
Yeah.
So it could use a wee bit of maintenance. But it was a fun experience. And I definitely enjoyed going to the labyrinth at Louisville.
So I'm curious. So an escape room, we'll say, costs $40 a person. You're going to find some less. You're going to find some more. But we'll just say $40 a person is a pretty decent middle of the road if you're in sort of a high production escape room. What is it costing to do the labyrinth?
So I want to say our hour and a half, because it's you're timed essentially. So an hour and a half wristband was $15, $15 or $20 each. So
that's very reasonable and also explains why there's no maintenance.
Yes. Yeah. But it was the technology they have in there was actually pretty cool. Like, as I mentioned, you just sort of touch. There's a lot of like your body touching metal things creates a circuit. There were lasers that we had to go over. And But yeah, it wasn't expensive at all. And quite frankly, we probably were there for 80 minutes. I think at the end, we were like, you know, we could eke out our 10 minutes or I think we're good. I'm tired. We had fun. Yeah. And the climbing, you know, 53 year old guy climbing through a ball pit and stuff, you know, took a little bit of effort at times, but it wasn't anything super strenuous, but it was fun.
Very cool.
It was a unique experience. So In a trip full of unique experiences, it was another one to do.
Nice. And then once again, that is also in the same mall as the Meow Wolf?
No, but it's reasonably close. It's probably 15 minutes away.
Very cool.
So that's it. Anything else you want to chit-chat about, Bruce?
You know, I think we've done our due diligence, our due service for this fortnightly to bring things to the masses. I think we've done what we need to do. I think we've clocked in. We've shown some cool things. I think we can save it for the next one.
I like it. Well, Bruce, always fun talking to you. I really appreciate it. Just because you're awesome, man.
You as well. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing your family's experiences throughout the greater Grapevine area. Is it Grapevine or Sugarland?
Grapevine. Okay. It's basically between Dallas-Fort Worth, just north of the airport.
Okay. I think I've been there. I think the one time I went to BGGCon,
yeah,
there was like a bus to take you there.
Yep.
So I think I've been there, but not to the mall.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just go north from the airport, you're pretty much going through Grapevine anyway. So yeah. Yes, you have been there. I've been there with you, but not to the mall.
Okay. I thought we had been there. Okay. Cool. Then I'm not a crazy person. There we go.
Well.
Oh, very good. Thank you so much. Thanks for letting me be a part of this. To all of you out there, thank you so much for listening. If there's anything that you want to talk about, that you're out there, that you're passionate about, that you think would be interesting listening, I stress that, that you think it would be interesting listening, let us know. We'd love to have you on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm Eric Dewey.
I'm Bruce Vogue.
And you've been listening to Inverse Genius Fortnightly. Thanks.
That's it for this episode of the Inverse Genius Podcast. The Inverse Genius Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 license. Thank you.